If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Today is December 4th. It's 2015. And this is another exciting edition of The Mincing Rascals, starring me, John Williams, plus and by...
also Steve, featuring
Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, the Tribune columnist. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Just a supernumerary for the John Williams podcast.
Kristen McQuarrie is here. She's a columnist and editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, John.
Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Hi, Steve.
Hello, John.
Last October, a white Chicago police officer, Jason Van Dyke, shot and killed a black teen named Laquan McDonald. Police said the officer was provoked. The video shows that he was not. It took over a year for that Van Dyke video to be released and charges to be filed against the officer. Activists now want Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez to resign. She says she's not going to. Should she, Eric Zorn? Should she just step away?
No, she should not resign. There's an election coming up. There's a primary election coming up in March. At which point voters will have their chance to consider the case against Anita Alvarez, which I believe is longer than just this one incident. There are a number of cases that she's handled that a number of us have problems with. I think what she did here was she did not put enough emphasis and energy and speed into this case, and she let it take its sweet time, and it demanded faster action from her. I don't think that there was a conspiracy here. That's just my thought. I think that what's happened here is that she did not provide enough speed to this investigation.
Tell me how an investigation works. I mean, how in the world does this thing take over a year for her to file charges against the officer?
I did speak to her people at some length last week trying to get an answer to that very question. I was asking them to take me through week by week, month by month, what happened. And some of the things they can't talk about. But one of them is, of course, that the evidence has to be presented to a grand jury. The other thing is that when police officers are charged, with wrongdoing, they have other rights that need to be respected. The Supreme Court has found they also have collective bargaining rights that have to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it takes when you have a number of witnesses like this, it takes time to coordinate that. Now, should it take 400 days? No. She was also at the time trying to work with the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. So there are issues that.
So she can't just say, look at the video and go, wow, there's no defense of that. That will be. The charges have to be filed against the police officer. She can't just a month later go, wow, I saw the video. We will be filing charges.
Well, one of the things that she points out, and it's a good point, which is that when the Washington Post took a look at 54 cases in the last few years of when police shot civilians and were accused of wrongdoing, that in most of those cases, even when there's video, the police officers are acquitted because the case against them is somehow doesn't have all the evidence together.
I'm going to get mad at you, Eric, if you keep talking like this.
I'm just telling you what she's saying and why I don't think she should resign. But I do think that the voters need to have their say, and they will have their say soon. This is not someone like Gary McCarthy who serves at somebody else's pleasure.
Okay,
she serves at our pleasure.
What do the rest of you, or any of you, think about the justification for her taking this long, though? I mean, that sounds to me like an excuse. I want to know why in the world she didn't think this was going to blow up on her if it took 400 days.
Well, there is a federal grand jury sitting, right?
Yes.
And they've heard from dozens of witnesses in this, and one of the things she says is that she was working in cooperation with the feds. Now, it's not unusual at all for a state prosecutor to file charges ahead of a federal investigation, correct? I mean, I would think
she could operate independently, sure.
So let me take a shot at trying to defend her on this.
Okay, I'm going to get mad at
you,
too.
Yes,
it's three against one here, I think,
well,
John.
Well, because we generally...
Really?
Generally when the feds are involved in something, we sort of give them permission to be the lead. They have much more resources. I mean, you have to think Anita Alvarez every day is dealing with, you know, 20 rape cases and 50 domestic violent cases, maybe more. She has a huge office to run. And so when the feds step in, I almost think it's sort of a relief. It takes a little pressure off because they do have greater resources. And we learned from the manager of the Burger King where some of the surveillance video was missing that he testified before the grand jury earlier this year. So the case was kind of moving along. And as to the FOP contract, I just read part this section of it before I walked up here. And the police officer, there is a whole chain that sort of discipline goes through in a grievance process. And so I don't necessarily think that she dropped the ball. I think the timing when she did finally jump out clearly was, I don't want to say political, but it was part of the, you know, we're going to release this video and we're going to need to tamp down whatever type of violence.
I don't
riots.
Mind that as a motive. Yeah. I mean, if you can do something that's inevitable and you do it now to keep the violence from going too high, sure.
But had there not been a video released, John, and none of this had been, you know, forced prematurely, that's the wrong word, but by this clock, and had it all come out when the feds came out with their charges, you know, maybe 4, 6, 8 months from now, you know, we wouldn't be having the dispute, right? I mean,
Would there be even charges? I mean, it would be.
Well, and that's not my point. My point is the release of the video. I mean, we're up in arms now because we've seen the video release. Had the video not been released, there would have been more patience for an ongoing, even more lengthy investigation, I think.
So
it's because of the filing and the court-ordered release of the video that all of this, you're looking at me oddly, Kristen.
Oh, am I? No, this is just my resting bitch face. I'm sorry.
It's 2 weeks in a row I got that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Steve, here's my question then.
If I get it every day.
if she loses the election, Steve, as a result of this, will that be unfair?
No, not at all. That's what voters do. Voters
I know that, but
decide.
You guys are sounding like you're circling the wagons
Alvarez. No, you asked,
where's the outrage?
You asked if she should resign. And I think the three of us agree that, no, she should not resign over this. This is what elections are about. And there's going to be a primary, you know, pretty quickly. We know this is what elections are about because the sponsor of her chief opponent in the primary has been her loudest critic in her official capacity. Right. I mean, Tony Preckwinkle was very quick to come out and blast Alvarez. It's Preckwinkle's former chief of staff who's
right.
been put up or who is running against Alvarez. So, you know, some of the people calling for Alvarez's resignations, their motives are not altogether pure either.
Not pure at all, really. I mean,
altogether unpure is what I meant to say.
I want to be clear. I think she should have acted with more dispatch. I think there should have been more urgency in her presentation. She was furious yesterday. She showed more passion about this case yesterday in defending herself than she showed about this kid getting gunned down in the street.
The majority of those victims being minority, and to be portrayed in this light by seasoned politicians with political agendas is disgusting and it's degrading. I'm going to continue to be the Cook County State's Attorney, and there's no way that I would ever even consider resigning.
I think she should have acted faster. I think it's legitimate to hold that against her. I am saying that I don't think it's a firing offense that she took this long to do this, but I'm not saying that I'm happy with it. It's like,
no,
oh,
I
that's
agree
okay.
With you.
I think it should have been done faster, and I think the mayor needed to respond with more urgency and more passion about this back when, not now. But
boy, she's going to have to mount a hell of a campaign because one of her detractors said in the Chicago Tribune today that it's not just the execution of justice, but it's the perception of justice. If people don't believe that her office or she are acting fairly, then she's got to get ahead of that and convince people that they are, because perception becomes reality.
Well, that's
then.
What happened to Gary McCarthy, right?
Really? Well, okay. Well, let's do that for a second. You don't think Gary McCarthy should have lost his job?
I think that perception got ahead of
reality. No, based on merit alone. Merit alone.
He was not. Otherwise, he was not doing a bad job as police superintendent.
How does something like that get covered up that long, and you tell me he's doing his
job?
Well,
I'm telling you that I think I agree that he should have been out in front of that. He should have changed things more than he did. But Mayor Emanuel expressed full confidence in him like less than a week ago.
Yeah, well, and then, he flipped
and then,
in a day.
He expressed full confidence in him when he fired him. I mean,
I know.
Didn't he? I mean, didn't he?
Did.
He's a wonderful guy. He's done great work. And
I think one of the things Anita Alvarez will have to do if she's going to win, and let me just say two things. One, she is a career prosecutor, and I like having someone leading that agency who has prosecutorial experience. We typically get a politician who knows nothing about how to win a case, or I like having someone in charge of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office who's actually done the work, and I don't think either of her other people running against her have. And
in the
past,
Kim Fox has.
Well, she's an attorney, but
she's a prosecutor.
She was a prosecutor.
She was
okay,
office, yeah.
I stand down. Kim Fox was a prosecutor at some point. Now she's chief of staff to Tony Preckwinkle. The other thing is that Anita pointed out yesterday that I think is a fair point. As the prosecutor for Cook County, she is defending every single day mostly minority victims of crime. And so this shroud around her that somehow this was that she was being racist or she was ignoring the needs of the minority community. She needs to be very clear that every day she is in court fighting for victims of crime who are overwhelmingly minority in this county.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific point, and I don't know how she's going to keep that in people's ears, because I think that's fair. I think that sounds fair, Kristen. But here's my last question to you guys before we move on to a different topic, and that is, there's a lot of bad things about this, so where do we begin? Maybe McCarthy had to go, maybe he didn't. Maybe Alvarez has to go, maybe she doesn't. But what's the central problem with the Laquan McDonald case? I mean, Steve, if you're going to start somewhere, what is it? Greater transparency, quicker prosecution time, union rules with the cops have to be changed? What?
Well, if I can further surprise Kristen, I say it's the big union bosses. No, I mean,
Merry Christmas, Kristen.
Oh my goodness, be still my
beating
heart.
She lost her bitch face.
It's back.
And it's back.
No, look, I think there are a lot of problems with this collective bargaining contract. The fact that this guy should have been fired that day,
yeah.
You know, and the fact that he was able to stay on and be paid for over a year is outrageous. You know, short of being charged with the crime, just the video of that bad action should have been enough for him to lose his job. So there's a collective bargaining issue here. I'm most worried about what we're going to find out from this federal investigation about his fellow officers, you know, because they were all standing there. They all saw it. Did they take some of this Burger King video? I still don't think I completely understand that. Was there this sort of conspiracy of silence to protect a guy who gunned down someone with 16 shots? That's what worries me the most about this whole thing.
You know what I'm worried about, too, is what that Ronald Johnson video is going to show, because the same month, another young black man was shot down. That video is going to be released, and it's possible that that will look, you know, unprovoked as well.
It's possible that we're going to be talking next week on this show about the very same, about Ronald Johnson III in that video. Yeah,
and that officer also assigned to desk duty.
Well, I mean, I understand. Well,
still on the job.
I don't know if you'd be fired, but maybe suspended until they can adjudicate.
I think if
this.
You shoot someone 16 times, you should be fired.
I think the problem is that there's not enough speed, and there's not enough transparency, and there's not enough accountability in the police.
If they would
justice
just show
system.
Me the video, I could hammer it out for him in about 25 minutes. You know, I mean, I'm really not kidding.
I think
that's beyond the pale.
Let's put radio talk show hosts in charge of police.
I'm not
discipline.
Being rash.
No,
I want to be king for that very reason.
I know you.
Sensible person.
Would you ever want that officer back protecting and serving?
No, I wouldn't.
So then he should
be fired.
Well,
that's part of the union. That's part of the police problem. He shouldn't have been to begin with. It's not like this was his first transgression
for
crying
complaints.
Out loud.
I mean, I think it's the police disciplinary procedure needs to be faster. It needs to be much more transparent, and they have to hold police who misbehave accountable.
So let me do it again. And watch Kristen. We need structural changes. How's that?
Ding, 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 ding.
All right, let's move on to the
like a Christmas tree.
Inland Regional Center shooting in San Bernardino, California. I don't want to dwell too much on too many of the details in this podcast because even as we speak, new information is coming out. But we'll just talk about it a little bit. We all know 14 people killed as of this conversation and 21 injured, presuming the 21 still live. That number will stay at 14. The two armed suspects, a married couple, were killed by police. Saeed Rizwan Farooq, who was born in Chicago, by the way, he's a U.S. citizen, and a Pakistani national, Tashfeen Malik, his wife. It was maybe staged, but it looked like he was upset, left a Christmas party, came back with them, and they carried out an obviously well-planned mass murder. What has happened since is interesting. Let's just for a second talk about what happened on Twitter. Every single Republican, except Marco Rubio, Republican presidential candidate, immediately tweeted out their prayers, how sad they were, and their prayers. And every single Democratic presidential candidate, granted only three, but none of them mentioned prayers or sorrow. All of them mentioned anger at guns, specifically the NRA for that matter. And now the two sides are bickering at the tweets that the two of them have put out there. Republicans are mad at Democrats because they're making it a policy debate, and Democrats are mad at Republicans because they're offering up just prayer and they're not addressing the real problem. Here's my stand on this one. While my political position is with the Democrats, I think it's shameful that they would criticize, say, Jeb Bush for wishing his heartfelt thoughts and prayers to the first responders and the families of the victims. How can you be critical of somebody for tweeting that out? It may be incomplete, but we're talking about Twitter. Now, what do you think, Eric?
I think it's not enough, and I think that the criticism is not that he's tweeting out his thoughts and prayers, but that's all he's done. That's all he's willing to do. This entire field is staunchly in favor of continuing the access to guns that is existence in this country, and that even yesterday the Senate votes to kill a proposal to keep people who are on the terrorist no-fly list from buying guns. That thoughts and prayers are not enough. That you can't just say, okay, thoughts and prayers, done. There's my reaction. I'm moving on. That's the criticism. I think nobody says that, oh, thoughts and prayers is a bad thing. It's just that it's not enough.
I think thoughts and prayers, that phrase should be banned from political discourse and certainly from Twitter, because it means nothing anymore. It's like, I'm going to spend more time with my family.
What are you supposed to say?
It's a completely empty phrase. It means nothing.
I don't know that it does, Steve. Weren't you horrified? And if you're a religious person, wouldn't you pray?
Okay, we've got three or four generic thoughts and prayers tweets, and we can slide in the. I'm not being critical of them, John, for saying that. I don't know what I would say. I think the president was mistaken with that CBS interview when it was still going on almost to right away talk about gun control, although I don't know what else would he say. I mean, here we are again. These guys bought these guns legally in this country. So I'm not being critical of the Republican candidates or any of them, but it's just one of those phrases that doesn't mean anything anymore.
Are you critical then of the Democrats for pounding on the gun lobby and
I just said I think the president was, you know, when we were still sorting it out, we're still sorting it out, but to right away sort of go to the need for stricter gun control, I think that was sort of tone deaf for a commander-in-chief, so sure.
Maybe so. I mean, Lord knows if anybody's felt the pain of these things over the last 8 years.
I think he's just run out of stuff to say.
Thoughts and prayers. He's got thoughts and prayers.
Well, what else are you going to say? And to get so animated and to turn what I consider to be pretty benign tweets. I mean, this isn't actually the candidates tweeting this out. They probably have some staffer. They're tweeting.
They're sending out,
you know, they're just covering their asses for whatever, you know, just like you. We're all going to hear them say Merry Christmas. I mean, to me, it's so silly to make a big deal over, a benign tweet. It doesn't mean that that's all that they're going to do, that they don't care, that they don't have some sort of a plan. If they were president, maybe they would do something differently. It just seems, you know, like heightened to a point of absolute ridiculousness.
Right. But where you do get agitated is that what some of them would have us all do is just, it would be like in Paris and Newt Gingrich. What if everybody in the conference center were armed? Then they could have all shot back. And that's the sort of logic that some people really have who are really running for president that scares the hell out of the rest of us. I mean, that's insane thinking. And that's out there, too. I don't know. I saw Marco Rubio interviewed today, and he thinks that the gun laws in this country are adequate. I can't get my head around that.
Nobody has the right answer, though. Even the Democrats who want more gun control, they can't point to all of these shootings and find out where was the slip in the crack that applies to all of them. They each had a different caveat to it. As we said earlier, they got guns legally in this case. So
but maybe that's part of the problem. I mean, people are saying that as a defense. Well, they got their guns legally. Well, maybe legally they shouldn't have been able to get that kind of a gun. But aside from that, you know,
they wanted
to kill people. It doesn't matter what laws were in place. The wife pledged on Facebook to ISIS. They were going to do something. They were also armed with body armor and small grenades. I mean, you can't change gun laws and prevent people like that from committing a terrorist act.
Well, you can't prevent all terrorist acts, but when you've got someone buying that much ammunition, what they had, something like 10,000 rounds of ammo, you know, you can't buy two packs of Sudafed a month in a drugstore in this country without the federal government going, hey, wait a minute, this guy's buying Sudafed, maybe he's making meth.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you can buy all the ammunition you want and all the guns you want, and nobody keeps track of it.
Here's Kristen, you're right. No one has the whole answer. No one does, not the left or the right. What is so maddening to me is because of that, none of us has tried anything. You know, I keep going back to first graders mowed down in their classroom. If that's not going to move us to try something, What is? And we didn't try anything. We just bitched about it on both sides again and continued to count up the bodies. We don't even try.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. And I've said on this program many times that when that bill got shot down in the Senate that only did federal background checks, it was terrible. It was a good piece of legislation and it got shot down. I'm not in favor of background checks to close gun show loopholes. But in this particular case, I mean, these were ISIS terrorists living among. Yes.
And there's people are so insincere. I heard Carly Fiorina say, you know, she went to the South Carolina shooting, said, well, that guy, you know, he had a background check and he got his gun legally. Well, that's true. But we also know that it's because the background checkers, right, didn't report on him quickly enough. And because they didn't, the default is to sell a guy a gun rather than to make him wait. You know, had they waited, had there been a law that said, no, you don't give a guy a gun until the check is done, he wouldn't have had his gun legally.
I'd like both sides to at least sound like they're interested in the conversation, but it seems like the two sides are so entrenched. I mean, Republicans don't even come to the table on this. And honestly, I don't know what Democrats are supposed to do, which direction they're supposed to go, because my own bias is that we have too many guns. We need to find a way to turn off the spigot. We need to reduce access to semi-automatic weapons and to weapons in general, total number of weapons you can own, rounds of ammunition. Paul Simon once said that have all the guns you want, but let's charge a lot for bullets. I thought, well, that's kind of a clever idea. Guns don't kill. Bullets do. But just something. Let's just all come
but
to
again,
the table
But again, I think you would
this.
Agree, if I can speak for Kristen, that's not going to solve it. Right? I mean, that's not going to solve the problem.
I don't know what the solution is, but I know you're never going to find it if you all don't at least concede a little ground and move towards the middle on this.
There was
right?
one little bright light about a month ago. There are just a couple of suburban gun shops in the Chicago area that are notorious for their weapons being sold and then later found on Chicago streets as part of a criminal act. Those gun shop owners worked with the village and basically put a new ordinance in place that polices themselves. And they are going to start reporting when somebody buys more than one gun per month. They're going to start keeping track of people who got denied, people they deemed suspicious. They're going to sort of keep their own database that they will share with local police officials. And if more gun shops would do that, it would, I think, make a difference.
This leads right into my recommendation for the week, actually.
Okay. That's Eric giving us the slow rap.
Can we get to this?
I want to say this, though, just for the record, as we record this on the 4th of December, 2015, Trump's never had a bigger lead. He's at 36, Cruz at 16, Carson 14, Rubio 12. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Okay, Eric.
Right, my recommendation this week is a Facebook post. I want to read the key paragraph from it. It's from a guy named Brian Murtaugh from Somerville, South Carolina. He writes, how about we treat every young man who wants to buy a gun like every woman who wants to get an abortion? Mandatory 48-hour waiting period, parental permission, a note from his doctor proving he understands what he's about to do, a video he has to watch about the effects of gun violence, an ultrasound wand up the ass just because. Let's close down all but one gun shop in every state and make him travel hundreds of miles, take time off work, and stay overnight in a strange town to get a gun. Make him walk through a gauntlet of people holding photos of loved ones who were shot to death, people who call him a murderer, and take him and beg him not to buy a gun.
Well, I was thinking like Charlie Brown Christmas or something for the recommendation part of the show, Eric, but that's okay. So that's a Facebook post by whom again?
Brian Murtaugh of Somerville, South Carolina. It's posted on my Facebook page, and I can make sure that Kristen puts it on there. Kristen Decker puts it on the
There's a lot of traffic on your Facebook page today, too, Eric, because of a couple of things you've said. So I'll second that. Eric Zorn's Facebook page. Is it Eric Zorn on Facebook?
No,
easy?
No, Facebook, whatever it is, /Eric Zorn, however you get to it. Yes.
Yeah, right. How about you, Steve Bertrand? Any special recommendations this week?
Okay, so this afternoon I'm interviewing John Meacham, the historian, and he's got a biography of George Bush out, George the First. And, you know, I'm busy, and I used to have a rule of always reading the books, right?
Right.
And John Meacham's book is a big book.
Did you ask him to write a shorter one?
You kind of skimmed it?
So, I I'm prepared. I read a lot about the book. I feel like it's going to be a good interview, but I'm going through it last night. I'm like, this is exactly the sort of book I love to read. Why didn't I read this book? So, my recommendation, now that I've about to be concluded with the interview, I'm going to pick up the John Meacham biography of George Bush and read that next week.
You know, I hate it when I do that, read the book after the interview, because I always come up with really good questions.
I know.
That I didn't ask. But how about you, Kristen? What do you like this week?
Well, this is not terribly intellectual, as, you know, I'm prone to be. I want to know if you guys watched the Lions-Packers game last night.
Oh, my.
If you
Oh, my goodness. I turned it off because Brendan and I go, wow, it's just not the Packers' year, and we turned it off.
Oh, my goodness.
20-0
It was so exciting and probably, I don't want to say once in a lifetime sort of a comeback, but it was great. And if you DVR'd it or didn't, and it's worth watching even if you know the outcome.
Aaron Rodgers said it's the greatest game he's ever played in. And I don't know if they replay games, and they probably don't replay Packer games for the Chicago market, but I would watch that beginning to end because it was really something to see, at least the highlights.
Just the last, but the, I mean, you know, this happened in Southeast Michigan where University of Michigan, my alma mater, blew a game on the last play in a startling fashion earlier this season. And then in the same season, the same football season, the Lions, unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen a loss like that in football where the team just had the game won. The other team was like, I mean, the Packers were just doing the lateral play, trying to move down the field.
Right.
It was like impossible. And then that play was clearly dead.
We're rapping, remember, Aaron.
Okay, all right. Kristen's got the best recommendation.
I'd love to see a stat.
Well, we haven't heard mine yet. Go ahead, Steve.
I thought you said mine was my Facebook page.
I still think it's going to be Kristen's. But is there a statistic about how often a Hail Mary pass works?
Yeah, that's interesting.
That would be interesting.
What is your guess, Steve, that it's a high probability or low?
Absolutely nil. I mean, almost nil, I should say.
Well, you don't have many options when you're in that situation. You got to go 70 yards. It's the last play of the game.
But they always try it, and I don't know if I've ever seen it work. I remember Doug Flutie's, and that's been 30 years ago.
And I remember Michigan, Colorado.
My recommendation is not Eric Zorn's Facebook page.
Oh, I thought it was.
The same cast in Chicago is in Minneapolis for Carole King's Broadway production, Beautiful. It's the same cast. I saw it here, and oh my gosh, is that a fun show. It's just terrific. I thought I'd be disappointed that it's not Carole King's voice coming at me from the stage. You hear the songs in your head, and it's not what you're getting. The show, the play, the story is so good. It's so funny. It's so endearing. What a sweet person she is. And the music is very good. So if you have money and time and can find tickets to Beautiful, that's my recommendation. That is this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. It's produced by Michael Heidemann and Kristen Decker, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. This is John Williams. Happy holidays. We'll post to you next week.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!